Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at denverfan.com. Presented by Siltahar Motors. The car buying experience is as easy as call, click, or come in at Siltahar Motors. Get upfront trade value with one call. Research and compare vehicles at sthmotors.com. Or come in and ask for Greg Larson and get $500 off any purchase. Siltahar Motors. Easy to find and conveniently located right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
McKinnon and O'Reilly off the opening faceoff underway here in Denver in round two. Carr gloves it down, had a tough time with it. O'Reilly scores! Ryan O'Reilly picks up where he left off in round one. Rampton hit by Borrego, but Rampton still on it. Throw to the net, loose puck, they score! Chuskin, and it's time. Landeskog, as he's falling, made the pass. That shot, they score! Sam Girard got it through. Colorado has their first lead. Here's Kyrou right back in. Jordan Kyrou drags, scores! Jordan Kyrou ties it. Here's Manson. Girard, his shot tips, save Binnington. Rebound, he got that one too. Kadri had the follow-up. Binnington fell over. Here's Manson. Bennington's reset. Manson scores! Josh Manson wins game one.
Ah!
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Pump day!
Oh my God, Fever, you're throwing so much at us. Woo! Who needs sleep? We'll sleep when this thing is over in July. Wow, what a start to round two. And I'm feeling good. Chad Anderson for Stink Stick will be back tomorrow from Alaska, but I'm good, man.
You must be caffeinated.
I am. I think I'm still riding the adrenaline high from last night. Now, check back with me at about 11 o'clock this morning, which is going to be, you know, just like boom. But hey, not my problem now and not your problem either, as you listen and are pumped up as well after what we saw last night. We're here to talk about it with you. RamosLaw.com text line 303-716-1043. Treat this like the day after a big Bronco win. There haven't been many over the years, but there'll be a lot more this year. But certainly want to talk about this game, and we'll hear from the heroes and the people involved. But overall, Chad, your impressions of game one?
Boy, that had a little bit of everything. I tweeted this out last night, and the only thing that I could think of going to overtime was that's the equivalent of a football team having like 500 yards of offense going to yeah. overtime with a team with about 150 or 175
right.
yards of offense.
Yeah, yeah.
That ice was so tilted, especially the second period. If they can bottle what they did in that second period last night, this team is going to run roughshod over the West, and I would say even in the final if they play like they did in the second period. It was phenomenal how dominant they were. And honestly, Mike, if they could play once a week, if the Avalanche only played once a week, they'd never lose. They were so fresh and had so much jump. I mean,
starting in the second period.
I think they started strong.
First period, I saw a team that didn't quite have its legs yet. I saw a team that hadn't played in over a week. Just the first period. But after that, the benefits of the rest kicked in, and it was awesome to watch.
If they played once a week, I don't know if anybody would ever beat them. I thought there were a lot of guys that had really good games, and some guys that you wouldn't necessarily expect, right? I was sitting there making my notes. I was typing them into my phone last night, and I was like, man, in this second period, Byram and Girard are playing really well. Yeah. Bang, Girard goal.
Yeah.
Right?
That was one of the best games Girard's played.
Yeah, he was great. Landeskog was great all night, despite not having a point. Even the guys that I thought didn't necessarily play well, like, I thought Kadri was a little bit out of sorts and was making some mistakes, but he won 8 out of his 9 faceoffs.
Yeah, he was still all over the place.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, he was always involved in the play.
Mm-hmm.
So That is as dominant of an overtime playoff game as you're going to see, because it was completely one-sided.
Well, let's hear from some of the heroes, including the hero, Josh Manson.
You know what? I think that's one of my favorite things about tonight was after they scored that first goal, there was no change in the mentality on the bench. I mean, it's easy to get deflated when you get a bounce like that and you feel like you're playing well and a bounce like that and it ends up in the back of your net. But there was a response right away. And I think that's such a good sign for a team. And, you know, that's a good team across the way there. They've got a lot of returning guys that have won, so they know how to win. So it's easy to get deflated, but we found a way. It was good.
Yeah, it was one of those nights where, boy, it would have been easy to start to wonder, hey, the hockey gods are not behind us. We've hit five posts. That just doesn't happen. That might have tied a playoff record or beaten a playoff record. Five posts? Are you kidding me? Then you got Binnington making crazy saves, and it would be real easy to think, all right, just what's going on here? But Gabe Landeskog and the crew persevered.
Yeah, I mean, reality is sometimes you're going to play really well and you feel like you deserve to win, but you don't. But tonight we were a real resilient group in there and felt a lot like game two against Nashville at home, where we felt like we outplayed him, created a lot of scoring chances. Goalie played really good for them tonight and, you know, made some saves that, you know, we felt like we had empty nets and he stuck a leg out or a hand out, whatever. He played really well. So, but in overtime, you know, you just got to go out there and we just stressed, just keep playing, keep doing what we're doing. We're creating a lot and just a matter of time. And we're able to hem them in and man's put a top shelf.
That was definitely one of the more dominant, close overtime games you'll ever see.
Yeah, it was a thorough butt kicking.
Had the Blues gotten a lucky bounce or something like that and won that game in overtime, it would have been that. You hear it all the time in playoff hockey. Well, they stole that. That would have been highway robbery if they had pulled that one out. The Avalanche were just absolutely dominant.
Well, we talked about it yesterday, and I've said it now for, what, the, you know, 25-plus years I've been covering hockey. This is the 105th consecutive season that luck plays too much of a role in deciding the Stanley Cup champion. And even the Blues' first goal with O'Reilly, you got a good bounce right in front of the net to take the lead.
Makar misplayed it, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
And it's just, you have to be good and you have to have a little luck on your side to win a championship in any sport. You know, make no question about it. I'm not saying you can just be lucky and win a Stanley Cup. I'm not saying that at all. But in addition to being a good team, you have to have some bounces and you have to have a little bit of luck. And the Avalanche didn't have any last night for most of the game. You know, five posts, they had three of them in the first period. And for them to persevere, just like Manson had said, and not get rattled and just keep at it, keep doing what they were doing, because it was good stuff. It was shift after shift. And I think that, Mike, is probably the most encouraging thing for me when we were previewing the series and looking at the depth of St. Louis and saying their third and fourth line and nine guys that have scored 20 goals, that I thought you might see a little ebb and flow with the Avalanche top lines dominating and constantly putting pressure, but then having to go back on their heels a little bit with the other lines on the ice. And that wasn't the case at all. Every line was pushing forward and had St. Louis on their heels all night.
All right, we're going to be reacting and celebrating this win all morning long with you. Want to hear from you. Coming up next, it only took one game, but did we already see the Avs' biggest advantage in this series on display? That's next.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
Binnington fell over. Here's Manson. Binnington's reset. Manson scores! Josh Manson wins game one.
I was kind of just looking out because there's a lot of guys coming at me with a lot of speed. I think EJ was 3 feet off the ground when he got to me. That's a big guy, so I was just kind of holding my ground. But it was a lot of fun, a lot of excitement. You know, it feels good to get that with your team. You know, that's the best part about playoffs is it's a team effort and you get to win with your team.
Josh Manson. How many of you had Josh Manson in your overtime pool for who would get the game winner for the Avs? His first career playoff goal? Yeah. Pretty big one as the Avs win in overtime to take game one. We're breaking it all down with you, reacting to it. Chad Anderson in for Stink. He'll be back tomorrow. And I think we saw right away in this series, game one, what is the biggest advantage for the Avs in this series. In that, hey, both teams are deep. Both teams are deep in the amongst the forwards. So much has been made of St. Louis with their 9 goal scorers with 20 or more goals. But we talked about this yesterday. They're banged up on defense. And we saw the Avalanche, the advantage that they have when it comes to defense versus defense. And what the Avalanche can bring with Makar, who I didn't think had that great of a game. But Sammy Girard played, I'd say, his best Avalanche playoff game ever. Byram was good. Manson was good.
Taves is always good.
My goodness, that guy is just the epitome of rock solid. But then you look at the Blues and you see what they're missing and what they don't have and what the Avs have, and you saw the contributions offensively. You saw the way that they played defensively. That right there, to me, is the glaring, glaring difference in this series and why the Avalanche will win.
The pressure last night starting, I think they had a good jump in the first period and had a few chances and hit 3 posts, but the second period was so overwhelming. It was such a mismatch across the board. It just did not stop. And I kept thinking, if you're Jordan Binnington, what's going through your head as that second period goes on? And as you prepare yourself for the third and then for overtime. But then now when he wakes up today and sits here on a day off and knows what's coming again in game two and then later down the line in the series when he could be replaced in net, even as great as he played last night.
Sure.
Just because they're going, if that continues, and let's make it clear, I don't expect it to look like the second period every game of this series. But if that continues, I mean, at what point does your will break if you're St. Louis, whether you're Binnington or anyone else? Because it got so lopsided, and it was lopsided in a hurry. But that's the thing about the playoffs, Mike. They still found themselves going to overtime, which is it's quite amazing, honestly, because that was a complete and total mismatch.
Some of the numbers, just to back up how dominant the Avalanche defensemen were, they had 25 shots on goal among their defensemen. 25. Outshot St. Louis defensemen 25-10. They got 2 goals. Manson and Sammy Girard scored 1 assist. Manson had a goal and an assist, and among the defensemen, they were +4. So the Avalanche defensemen were fantastic last night. Now, Manson's a great story. He came over here with much fanfare as, hey, this is the move that Joe Sakic is going to make to really address some of the shortcomings from last year's playoff run. They're acknowledging it, they're admitting it, and this is how they're going about solving it. And early on, Manson struggled a little bit. You're coming over, you're joining a style, especially for the defense, that is maybe a lot different than you used to playing. The defensemen are involved here. They pinch in, they jump, they're given the green light to get involved in offense. And Jared Bednar, talking about Manson, who's a real likable guy, said, yeah, it took a little bit of an adjustment.
Well, he's gotten better and better as he's been with us. You know, like he, you know, if you talk to Josh about his arrival here and the differences in our structure and the way we play and the things we stress, not right or wrong, it's just different, you know, and he's been there a long time playing the same way. And so there's differences, and he was thinking too much. And as he kind of, he's a real inquisitive guy and likes to be coached and wants to see things and comes in all the time and spends a lot of time with Nolan Pratt and wants to be real clear on things. And it's part of what makes him good. The structure of his game is part of what makes him so successful. And so as he's got more clear on that, he's become more dangerous offensively. He's become a better defender for us and a really relied upon guy. Now we're seeing exactly why we did get him. And, you know, it was a much-needed piece for us.
It's funny, right after the Nashville series, Manson was talking to the media, and he was talking about Makar, and he's like, man, this guy is just unbelievable. The skill level that this guy has and the way that he developed as a young player, so different than when I was coming up. it's just such a different way that these players are developed. And he was just awestruck by the way Makar plays. But yet, on this night, Manson was the offensive hero. And by the way, that took a lot of skill to, you know, get the puck back at the point, recognize that Binnington had been down. You don't want to shoot it right away because then maybe you draw into the possibility of a goalie interference type challenge that maybe gets upheld. But, you know, he settles the puck down. He waits until the traffic's there, and then he gets the shot through. And that's a difficult skill. In playoff hockey, you see so many shots knocked down. A defenseman's ability to get the puck through is huge at this time of year, and he gets it through. And great screen in front. Binnington never saw it. So there you go. The stay-at-home defenseman who was brought here with the idea of bringing some added grit and muscle is your offensive hero. Love it.
It could have been
shows
a
you that there's something special, but it shows you there's something really special going on here when you get really an unexpected, unsung hero like that winning yourself a playoff game.
Yeah, and in a game where they had so many chances with speed attacking the net, for him to just kind of pause, wait, hesitate, and then fire and win, right? You could see Binnington just flop face first flat on the ice after it went in.
Never saw.
He was so deflated for the way that it happened on the game winner.
Coming up, we've got the Morning Brew. We'll continue to hear from the heroes, more from Manson, more from Gabe Landeskog, more from Jared Bednar, and the Rockies evoking memories of the Broncos and Chiefs. That's all coming up next.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your Morning Brew.
Things are going to get weird.
You're going to eat lightning, and you're going to crack thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and coolers. Stat.
You know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino.
Damn, Jimmy. This some serious gourmet shit.
Let's get it on.
It was great. Like I said, it's not about the way I feel. It's the way the whole team feels. You know, seeing everybody come at me, that's the best part.
Josh Manson, your unexpected hero, as his shot from the point gets through, beats Jordan Binnington, who had been outstanding to that point, making 51 saves. But the Avalanche relentless assault ends up in the victory. And what I loved, Chad Andrus in for Stink will be back tomorrow. What I loved about two of the Avs' goals, including that game winner, was on the first one, who was in front of the net creating a screen? Nathan MacKinnon. Who was in front on that game winner creating a screen? Gabe Landeskog. You know, those are the kind of playoff goals, first of all, I love to see because of the effort and the sacrifice it takes. But that's what wins. That's what wins at this time of the year.
And I think last night was a
And your best players are doing it.
Last night was a great example of understanding or just seeing the visual of how hard it is to win a Stanley Cup playoff game. Because they dominated every phase and were awesome for the better part of 2.5 periods and still had to go to overtime and get a highly unlikely shot from an unlikely hero to go in to win it and end it. So it's just, it gave me, it reminded me of what it takes each game, game in and game out, to win any individual one in the playoffs.
And you go back to that that first goal by Nichushkin, and you had the work done by, first of all, MacKinnon wins the draw. Then you got Rantanen doing some really good work down in the corner, winning his one-on-one battle. Throws the puck to the front of the net. MacKinnon's there. And then Nichushkin there to get the put-back rebound. Next on the Morning Brew.
I liked our game the whole night. I thought we were resilient there. Obviously, we made a mistake on the penalty kill. We changed four guys. Gave them one that was too easy. And it is what it is. You know, we've talked to our team all year long about being resilient and being mentally tough. And we came out and got right back to our game. Didn't capitalize on the power play, but just kept doing what we were doing throughout the course of the 60 minutes. And, you know, eventually we felt like we have a chance and then break them down and get the winner.
Once again, this team shows their mental toughness. And it was shaping up to be one of the most unlucky Avalanche playoff games ever. You hit five posts. You have what I thought was a ticky-tack, real ticky-tack, holding call on Taves that set up the power play goal, the equalizer for St. Louis late. And then you had the line change that just was poorly executed, a bit unlucky. Great play by St. Louis, but, I mean, that was Keystone Cops, them running around to try to get back into play, and Kyrou ends up scoring. So just a lot of things that were working against them. But, you know, I think that we look back on it, that game two win over Nashville where they were forced to win a game where they were dominating, and it still went into overtime. I think that served them well last night.
Yeah, I think they have a good understanding based on past history, whether it's the first round this year or any of the last 3 years, that one mistake, two mistakes can decide the game. And last night, they were reminded once again, there was only one glaring mistake, I think, in the entire game on that change, and they got burned by it, and suddenly the game was tied, and we're going to overtime. And it was like, wait, what? How did that happen?
Right.
Right? And
how are we here?
Yeah. And I think they're well aware of that, and everyone knows and has a good understanding and got another reminder last night that, hey, we're really good and we can apply constant pressure to just about anybody, but you still have to finish the job. And they found a way to finish the job.
Next on the Morning Brew.
Felt a lot like game two against Nashville at home, where we felt like we outplayed them, created a lot of scoring chances. Goalie played really good for them tonight and, you know, made some saves that, you know, we felt like we had empty nets and he stuck a leg out or a hand out, whatever. He played really well. So, but in overtime, you know, you just got to go out there and we just stressed, just keep playing, just keep playing.
Yeah, the funny thing is, this is how good this team can be. They pour 54 shots on goal. They dominate puck possession. They dominate the pace of play. And yet, for all of us who've watched the Avalanche, we know they could be a lot better. They missed a lot of nets, a lot of shots high and wide. I think it was Rantanen in on a 2-on-1 and just completely missed the net. You know, so it this is what makes this team so scary, is on a night in which they had 54 shots on goal, it's like, yeah, but, you know, the overall shooting accuracy could have been better and probably will get better as they get back into the flow of this series after being off for a week.
Yeah, I was a little stunned how many went way wide. Because with the five posts, there were far more than that were just off wide and by a significant margin, right? They weren't really close. If that gets dialed in, I mean, come on. It's church.
Yeah, there was about a minute and a half left in the game, and Darren Pang between the benches said, yeah, boy, the Avs are missing the net a lot. And I made that same observation a little bit earlier, but hey, they still put 54 shots on goal. Next game, that number could be... Well, that could be 54 in regulation if they continue to buzz around like they were last night. Next on the Morning Brew.
That ball is hit high and deep to right field. Way back there, second deck. And we are underway.
On the second pitch of the game, crushes one. And the Giants lead just like that, 1-0.
Giants radio right there as the Rockies losing streak to the Giants, whether it's here or there, is now 12 in a row. Not the same kind of drawn-out, excruciating pain that has been caused by the Kansas City Chiefs over the Broncos, but this afternoon, the Rockies will try to avoid matching the 13 in a row that the Broncos have lost to the Chiefs.
So that's what I was just about to say, the Baker's dozen.
Holy smokes.
Right? If they gag today, it's going to be, hold my beer, Broncos. How many in a row can we lose to the Giants? They can't beat this team. And sadly, as good as the Giants were in the regular season last year, I think long-term going forward, roster, payroll, you're supposed to be worried about the Dodgers and the Padres. You're not supposed to be worried about the Giants
right.
as your top concern in the division. And they've lost a dozen straight.
All right. Well, there's always today. The beauty of baseball. There's always another game. We'll see if they can get the win this afternoon. That'll do it for the Morning Brew. Bring that to you each and every morning at 6:30, giving you a chance, much like a Bronco win, a chance to react after and get your thoughts on what you saw last night with the Avs and where this series is going. Does what we saw again last night, is it a reminder of why this team is so special and so unique compared to a lot of other teams in a lot of other sports? We heard more examples of it after the game last night. Share that with you next.
Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Arshon blocked by Shen. Rampton hit by Correa. Rampton still on it. Throwing the net loose. Puck, they score! It popped out for Nichushkin.
Yeah, like I said, I think there's a resiliency in this group, you know, and it's been building for a few years here. I don't know. Again, I think it comes back to the belief their team has, and then just they've been through some heartache, and they seem focused and determined to work through it.
Don't see this very often. Chad Anderson for Stink will be back tomorrow, but you just don't see, and it's a theme I'm going to keep coming back to with this team as they go on this long run that I'm convinced is going to land them in the Stanley Cup Finals, is how much they are willing to acknowledge what happened last year. And I continue to use the comparison to what the Broncos went through when they lost to Jacksonville and how they embraced it. They didn't hide from it. They didn't run from it. They used it as fuel. And the Avalanche doing the same thing with what happened to them last year against Vegas. It is, you know, it's rare. You've been covering sports your whole adult life. You know how athletes and teams are when it comes to painful things that happen. They want to move on. They want to turn the page. Hey, that was last year's team. A lot of new guys here. They don't want to acknowledge and embrace and face up to their history. This team does. And Bednar is just said it right there. We've learned some painful lessons, and that's what drives this resiliency you're seeing.
The truth will set you free. I don't think, especially as an athlete at this high of a level, or really in anything, I don't think you can move beyond things if you're just going to brush them aside and pretend they didn't happen or ignore them or continue to make an excuse for why it happened, because you know, in your mind, in your heart, deep down inside, as individuals, as a team, you know if you're putting up that front, and that can mess with you psychologically. That's where paper tigers come from. Guys who puff out their chests and make an excuse or say, well, this and this, and there's a reason for this, and a reason, and always pass the buck and have an excuse for it, right? They never really come back and get over the top. But when you own it, it's a burden that is off your shoulders and say, yeah, that happened. We failed. We didn't get it done, right? Now you're taking ownership of the situation. You're taking responsibility that it's on you to get it done this time around, right? I think it's a big difference psychologically when you know that you failed, but you survived and you have another chance. And you're grateful for that opportunity as opposed to trying to convince yourself that, well, there were extenuating circumstances and it wasn't really our fault. I'm glad they take ownership. I think it's great.
Some reaction from Avs fans the morning after from John. Had the opportunity to be at the game last night and had to pass on it because it was one of my kids' birthdays. Never make that mistake again. I can always celebrate the kid earlier or the next day. That's right. That's right. Birthdays come and go. There'll be one every year. Who knows how many times you'll get a chance to witness something like this.
Have you ever passed on a game that turned out to be something incredible?
Ooh, no, I don't. Nothing. Boy, I'd have to go back and think about that one. Nothing comes to mind, but I'm sure there are plenty of people who've been in John's case. Have you?
I believe it was May 4th. First,
oh, now you're remembering the date.
1991, ooh, I believe.
Where were you supposed to be? Texas, where'd you end up going instead?
Texas Rangers baseball game, and decided, I'm kind of tired. I've got some homework to do. I think it was 1991.
Nolan Ryan?
Seventh no-hitter.
Oh, you had tickets?
Yeah, my mom went with my dad because my dad asked me to go, and I said, I think I'm going to stay home tonight. Mom can go.
Mm-hmm. Now, that almost happened because it was April 29th, 1986, and we're all little kids, my brother, my sister, and I. My dad had tickets to a Red Sox game, April 29th, Seattle Mariners, and he didn't want to go. It was a cold night, and he's like, oh, man, do you guys really want to go? Yeah, let's go. Come on. All right. He does the dad duty. That night, Roger Clemens struck out 20. So that was kind of glad that we were able to go. Another one. Why does the TNT rules guy hate the Avs? I'm an Avs homer, but that guy clearly is biased against the Avs. You're talking about Don Koharski, the Have Another Donut guy. I wouldn't say he was biased against. He did say that the Taves holding call was legit. Rick Tocchet, meanwhile, is standing there going, come on. And I completely agree with Tocchet. His words, I love the word he used. He said, to call a penalty with 3 minutes left, it's got to be egregious. That was not egregious. That was just like a little tug and little pull. And I said tug and pull. And the official was there in the way as well. You let that one go. So for Koharski to say that was a good call, yeah, okay, maybe that's a good call in the first period of a game against Columbus in February. Not in the third period of a tight game with 3 minutes left. Now, the high-sticking call, I thought he got that one right. And St. Louis, I can understand if you were a Blues fan.
They were livid.
They were livid. He took it out on the camera there in the penalty box. But he made a good point. I thought Koharski made a very good point. He goes, we don't have a penalty for low sticking, but you are in charge of your stick. You are responsible for your stick. And whether it's a high stick or, in this case, a low stick where you just kind of swung it around, doesn't matter. You clip a guy like that, you're responsible for your stick. Whether it's high stick, low stick, whatever, that's a good call. So I thought Koharski got that one right.
Completely unrelated to the calls or non-calls last night, I will say, for the casual hockey fan, Don Koharski is the only official's name that everyone knows. And it's not just because he's the rules analyst on TV now. So I'll just leave that out there, right? Other sports, the NBA is notorious for knowing the officials' names for the wrong reasons. And the NFL, we see them every weekend with the crew chiefs announcing the penalties, and we know a lot of their names. Hockey, he's the only official that everybody knows the name of. So we'll just set that aside.
Google Don Koharski, Have Another Donut.
But I was
funny.
I was very pleasantly surprised last night that there were only three
power
plays.
Yes.
I loved it. It was great.
I loved it too. Loved it too. It's a playoff game. Let him play. Okay, if some things don't get called that we're used to getting called, fine. I could not agree more. No penalties. The game had pace. The game moved. The first period, for guys like us and you great 6 a.m. listeners who get up so early, when that game didn't face off till about 7:50, I'm like, oh, man, here we go. That first period took about 30 minutes to play. A 20-minute period took about 28 minutes to play. That's how quickly it moved along. So even with the game going overtime, it didn't feel like that crazy late of a night. So.
Was it the second period when they
made the comment? I give credit to the officials. Yeah, you're right.
Well, was it the second period when they made the comment on the broadcast that they hadn't had a whistle since the goal?
Yeah.
And it was like seven and a half minutes?
Yeah. So I give credit. I think officials in all sports could take a look at what that crew did last night and say, yeah, do that. Less of you, more of the guys competing. And if it means that a few calls don't get called that have fans howling a little bit, hey, I would much rather have a game under-officiated than over-officiated.
But to the Avalanche credit,
which is what, by the way, made the call on Taves at the end there so unique, because you weren't even close to making those kind of calls all night.
To the Avalanche credit, though, one of the key things that we said about the game last night about the series is you cannot put St. Louis on the power play. The only way you can get down in this series and be in jeopardy is if you give them a lot of power play opportunities, and they didn't do it. They weren't committing penalties. That's why there were no penalties. They played a very clean game.
Hey, Evans, tug and pull is better than what Bissonnette said on TNT last night. That's true. I think he was trying to talk about, like, running out the clock or clocking it, and it came out something else. Google that, too. What else we got? Chad, who knows? Maybe if you'd gone to that game, maybe the no-hitter never would have happened. That is kind of one of those things you think about sometimes as a sports.
I think about it all the time.
Had I gone, would that still have happened? Or would I have been able to change the cosmic fabric of that day?
The sports butterfly effect is one of the great fascinations of my life, because as a sports fan, because we're conditioned to not winning, I'm not going to say losing, but you don't win a championship very often when you're a sports fan. So you're automatically conditioned to have to deal with the bad when your team doesn't win the championship. Oh, the sports butterfly effects have consumed me. The Tuck Rule, 1991 Duke UNLV. Like, if those things would have never happened, what would the future have looked like? Oh, I'm obsessed with it.
Ah, but they did.
Yeah.
Keep those texts coming. Good stuff. 303-713-1043. Coming up next. Did the Avalanche feel the effects of the long layoff? Did it play a role? And for how long? That's next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.